In choosing the theme for this evening and for this whole weekend, I've been reflecting on the inner beauty that we all naturally develop as we go through the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows of our lives, and how as we go through them, appreciating the beauty of our lives, having gratitude, practicing generosity, and also going through the hardships where we develop patience, perseverance, resolution, the ability to just be with things as they are, that kind of deep abiding equanimity. How when we really pay attention to the vibrancy and to the grace of all of that, that inner beauty keeps growing as we mature, as we go through old age, sickness, and towards our death. And even as the body falls apart and things around us seem to fall apart one time or another, that beauty inside keeps growing. And that's what continues to shine through everything, no matter what cultural background we've come from, no matter what color we are, what financial or social status we have. What really matters when we get down to it is that inner beauty. There's a vibrancy and strength to that inner beauty that we depend on more and more as we mature in our lives as human beings and in our spiritual life. So that inner beauty is really, really important. And what I mean by that are the qualities of a discerning and compassionate mind and heart. I say compassionate because in order to develop these qualities, which I'll name in a minute, it takes compassion. It takes compassion for ourselves and compassion for those we live with, those we know, those we don't know, in order to have the wherewithal to have the intention and to have the discernment to actually intentionally and consciously develop them. So those qualities, those virtuous qualities are generosity. There are these 10 paramis many of you will recognize, generosity being the first one. Morality, or I like to call it harmonious living. Renunciation. Balanced effort is the fourth one. Wisdom, truthfulness, resolution, and goodwill. Goodwill meaning loving kindness or metta. And the last two are equanimity and patience. These are the virtuous qualities called paramis. And we all have them, we have them all. It's just a matter of recognizing and developing them and then seeing when their opposites arise in our lives in various situations and seeing when their opposites are there, if we can let them go, like when we see impatience there, if we can just give it space, let it arise, let it pass away, and then incline the mind towards patience. Just a simple example. This inner beauty is the shining grace of our lives. No matter how young or how old we are, they shine through everything. It's this light that we shine upon our path right in front of us and shine to others that really gives us a kind of a direction that we can go in our lives. Usually, we place our happiness in things that are really out of our control. It's a hard thing to really take in that most things are out of our control. But when we look honestly and realistically, it's true. We can't control the weather. We can't control people around us. We can't control this political situation. I mean, we find that out when we sit and we watch our own minds and see how uncontrollable they are, our own minds. But it's possible to have some great influence on where the mind goes and how long we stay with things that aren't serviceable to us or to others. The development of these qualities is in our control. It's in our power to develop them. And this is a source of great happiness for us, that we can actually do that, that we can place our happiness in our potential to develop them. And then when they're there, in our ability to recognize, to enjoy them, to acknowledge them, to use them. So it's really important to take some time to reflect on them, to see how they're working in our lives. So I wanted to give specific attention to them this evening. As I mentioned, they're generic to any culture, to any religious teaching, but they don't have to be religious. They're actually common sense. Somebody, actually a student, once told me that they thought that the teachings of the Buddha or the Dharma is advanced common sense. It's just really, really paying attention intentionally to what's going on in our own minds and how we can be resolute in developing what's useful, what's harmonious, and also be resolute in letting go of what isn't. Now, this is common sense. The word parami, a lot of times those of us who have been in the Dharma for a while know that that can mean perfection. It's the perfecting of these particular qualities of the mind and the heart. But there are two ancient meanings that come with that. And I wanted to mention them because they weave together to make something much more powerful and stable that goes on in the world of paramis. Param means carrying one across to the further shore. Carrying one across to the further shore. Meaning that it carries us through the ups and downs of life to what is beyond that. If we have any aspiration to know what's beyond the ups and downs of life. It can carry us through the ups and downs and to the other shore, to that peace that's beyond all these ups and downs. Parama, also, that's another connection to the word parami. It means of foremost importance, of foremost importance in formulating our lives and how, what virtuous qualities we will develop in our lives to help us get to the other shore, or at least go across this and navigate this life that we're in now. So as Chris mentioned, this weekend, I'll cover five of them. Tonight I'll cover patience, and then tomorrow will be sila, or harmonious living, along with truthfulness. They kind of go together. And then the last day will be goodwill, or loving kindness, and then equanimity. And those two serve each other quite well as well. Usually, at the beginning of a new year like this, many of us are reflecting on the resolutions we'd like to carry out in our lives, or at least for this year. How many of you have begun to think about that already? Resolutions, yeah? And if not, maybe this will spur you on to maybe something more or different. This involves, when we make resolutions, activation of inner strengths, like wisdom and honesty and compassion for our lives, to make it a course that we take for the year, with some very clear intention, reminding ourselves over and over again in a gentle way that this is the direction, this is the aspiration of my intention this year. We aspire towards what is wise and helpful on the mundane level, on our everyday life, for better health, to maybe save more or not use as much of the Earth's resources, maybe to give back, to be more generous, to be home a little more, to cook more dinners, to grow a garden, to lose 10 pounds. It's always my aspiration, but I never quite get there. If I do, it comes back again after that. But it's always good to include an intention in the direction of our highest spiritual aspiration. It's not often that we sit down and think about, what's my highest aspiration, really? Can I take this year to go in that direction? Not necessarily to have to achieve anything, but at least to go in that direction. And that highest aspiration that we have now changes from year to year, too, to make room for how it could change, how it could be more refined, or maybe the bar could be a little higher. Who knows? So there's always a humble yet powerful quality necessary during the beginning, during the middle, and during the end of those resolutions. And this is the quality of patience that we need. And it's the one that I want to start out with in terms of the paramis. Patience. I became really interested when the Buddha talked about developing the paramis, because one of the things that was said over and over again as these paramis were talked about is that patience is the supreme virtue. Of all of the virtuous qualities, patience is a supreme virtue. It's not a quality that gets as much attention as compassion or wisdom. And it's interesting that every time I talk about patience during any length of a retreat, whether it's a weekend retreat, a three-day retreat, or a three-month retreat, as soon as I talk about patience, almost everyone, without fail, says, that was just right. You know, so patience comes in handy all the time, in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end of our life, of our practice. It's important to give it the nourishment of this kind of attention. Just listening to stories and details and refinements about patience. And how does it work for us? How has it worked for us in our lives? If we look closely, we can see that every time a little reminder to ourselves of patience has given us more endurance. We've been able to stay with something for a little while longer, even if it's just a minute longer of listening to whatever is on the news or whatever political party is not to our liking, just to stay open a little bit longer. It brings that kind of energy that maintains an inner kind of quiet, which we all need in our lives, especially in this age, this electronic age, when everything's going so fast and there's so much of it. We need that space of being a little more quiet. We need to keep remembering to keep turning in the direction of our highest aspirations, or the highest one we can think of in that moment. And maybe all it is being more patient for that period of time. I heard a story once that piqued my interest about this virtue of patience. During the time of the Buddha, there were certain rules that were laid down to keep the order of bhikkhus, or of monks, together and in harmony. But before those rules, which there are 227 of them that were developed along the way, bit by bit, before all those rules were laid down, there was only one rule, and that was patience. And I could imagine that maybe there was only one rule in the beginning, because it said that all of the people, all of the monks that were in the order were fully enlightened or almost fully enlightened. So it's easy to see why the patience could be the only rule. But as more joined the order, they had to develop different rules regarding every aspect of their life in the monastery together. But still, it said that patience was the most important of all. It's the highest, the most important quality. Patience is the supreme virtue. One of our teachers, the main teacher of my own practice, Sayadaw Upandita, is known as the energy teacher. He encourages a lot of energetic, balanced, moment-to-moment, gentle, persevering effort. Doesn't seem that way sometimes when you've heard stories about him. He's very stern and strict, but he wants it to be balanced along the way. But whenever I've come into the interview room and he has sensed that there is some striving or pushing or wanting to get somewhere, before I've even completed my bows and knelt down to give my report to him, I would hear the words in Pali, "Patience is the highest virtue." He would say that in Pali. I forget how to say it now, but I should remember. I've heard it so many times. And then he would say in his broken English, the road to deliverance or to nirvana or to nibbana is paved with patience. It's one step at a time with patience. So this is good to remind ourselves of. It has tremendous influence on our spiritual evolvement and in our daily lives. We all know this. We may not realize how much of the time we're leaning into the future. It's one way to kind of quietly discover where we can bring patience into our lives when we're sort of rushing to get to the next thing. We're in the future and not in the present moment. We're not noticing with a kind of holistic strength what's happening right now. We're not giving room to see what could be let go of or what could be developed more in order to help us to be present in this moment and in our ways of kind of understanding what needs to be done. I have a friend who's been very patient, but sometimes not. So she has this saying which comes from her direct experience that says, she says, if you're not in the now, you're in the ow. Because it's really painful, not just for others, but for yourself, to be impatient. One time I saw her, you know, quickly taking off some kind of, it was on a package and it was rubberized. And she was hurrying to get it off, and she just pulled it off, and it snapped back and just hit her in the mouth. And that's when, right after that, she said, if you're not in the now, you're in the ow. So it really reminds me of how painful it can be when I remember that big right on her mouth. She wondered what her karma was, what the karma resultant was at that time. There's a story of a young boy. I found this story in the sports page of the Honolulu Advertiser quite a while ago. This young boy was traveling to Japan to a school of a famous martial artist. And when he got there, he had an audience with the teacher, with the sensei. And so the teacher said, "What do you wish from me?" And the student said, "I wish to be your student and become the finest karateka in the land, I guess that means, you know, martial artist. How long must I study? And the master said, 10 years at least. And the student said, what if I study twice as hard and fast as all your other students? And the master replied, 20 years. 20 years. What if I practiced day and night with all my effort? 30 years was the master's reply. So the student said, how is it that each time I say I'll work harder, you tell me it will take longer? And the master said, the answer is clear. When one eye is fixed upon your destination, there is only one eye left with which to find the way. That's like we're not all there. We're just kind of grabbing for some future experience that may never come because we don't have both eyes in this present moment's experience. So it's this full and complete presence that gives us more clarity, that can give us a broader view, more space for wisdom to come in, more compassion for ourselves and for others, to find the way, to know what's going on, to really take in the situation, the present moment, our inner response to everything. And then from getting all that information, to be able to respond skillfully to life that's helpful to others, that's helpful to ourselves. Sometimes I like to say that patience is the wisdom of pausing. It's so sad because we're losing that in our life. It's going so fast. We have to click on that send button so fast sometimes, or at least we make the habit of doing it, that don't you regret sometimes that you haven't paused before you hit that send button? Oh boy, you just can't take it back anymore. At least, you know, there have been times in the past when I've run to the mailbox, took that letter back and redone it. But I can't do that anymore, you know. I have to write another email that says, I didn't mean to say that. I wasn't thinking too clearly. So patience is the wisdom of pausing. It's a really good one to put in our lives. Just can we pause a little more? Just to give room to take in something a little more fully, to take in our own response to it, and to just have some discernment. Where should I go with this? Can I let go of something? Can I bring something in order to respond more skillfully? To nourish those qualities that we can bring in. If we reflect truthfully, patience is really an old inner friend. Because when we look at our lives, no matter where we're at right now, whether we're in the younger generation or we're, you know, older, we're saging, we've had to have a lot of patience, and maybe sometimes a lot of impatience too, to get those projects done, to get that degree finished, to finish that addition on the house, to send the children or grandchildren through school, to help the ones ahead of us, our elders, to get through their aging process. We've had to have a lot of patience. And it's there. We just need to stay with it, to recognize it, to acknowledge it, to nourish it more and more. It's also made it possible to regain harmony. It's kept the harmony a lot, but sometimes we've blown our tops, we've lost the harmony among friends or among the family, and it really helps us to regain, to restore some kind of reconnection with others and with ourselves. I'm a mother of 4 grown children, and there have been lots of times, I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say this, and you all know, most of you who know me know that I'm just a regular person. I've been a regular mom, and I've been just kind of like a normal partner and friend and yogi along the way. And I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've blown my top a lot of times. And with my kids, growing up with them and helping them grow up too, there have been many times when I've blown my top. And like, you know, get that room clean, get your homework done. What about those dishes? They've been in the sink an hour already, you know. And the kids, they lose their patience with me. They've lost their patience, sometimes disrespectfully, with me too. You know, and they say sometimes, "Mom, give me a chance. You know, I'm just trying to get here," or something like that. And then I just back off and say, "Okay." And then I regain their trust again by being patient with them. And it all came together when I saw a bumper sticker that said, "Patience is the ability to let your light shine after your fuse has blown." So, you know, after all that, I think, okay, I've got another chance. I've got another chance to regain my connection with them and to say, okay, I'm going to shut my mouth right now. And I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath and to do those dishes. I hope it's pretty soon, though. So in terms of our spiritual practice, in the early years of practice, I would hear the teachings. And probably all of you have experienced some or part of this, more of this even. I'd hear the teachings and I'd think, I don't understand this. You know, I'd hear the teachings on not self, the anatta characteristic, or dependent origination, or karma. And rebirth, I wouldn't go for it. I just couldn't get it. And I wanted the Dharma so badly when I first started out on the path. I felt like I came home to something when I first heard the Dharma. And then it was like my hair was on fire, you know, and I really just needed to get it all. And my teacher would say, "You have Dharma greed. You have Dharma greed." You know, and then I go to the teacher and say, "I don't understand it, but I want to understand it." And he would say, this is Munindraji, he would say, "On account of your impatience," he would say it just like that, "on account of your impatience, you want to understand everything now. But in time you will understand. And you're actually going through your own practice, doing your sittings, doing your walkings, studying now and then, developing the paramis. In time you will understand. And then you will hear the Dharma, you will read the Dharma, and you will say, oh, now I understand experientially. It's not about reading it a book and then getting it all at once. It's usually that we experience it, and then something that we've heard kind of clicks, or something that we've read kind of clicks. It's usually this unrealistic greed for something that we have, and in this case, spiritually, the Dharma, that we get impatient. A few years ago, when the youngest of my grown children was about 14, now she just turned 30, she was attended a school in Barre, Massachusetts, where we lived about 3 months of the year because we taught that three-month course there in Barre, Massachusetts. This is Steve Armstrong. He's my husband and myself. So we brought Therese, our daughter, a stepdaughter of Steve and my daughter, with us. And I was first writing my first talk I ever wrote on patience. And I didn't know what to write, so I said, I want to hear it from somebody like Therese, because I like to give real down-to-earth Dharma talks. So I said, would you please write me what you think about patience? What are your points about patience and impatience? And one of the points she made is that greed stops you from being patient, wanting it all at once. And I really related that to how I wanted the Dharma when I went back and thought about my life and developing the Dharma in my own heart, in my life. She also wrote, when you don't have patience, your mind becomes disturbed. It really feels like that. That's sort of the emotional feeling we have inside, feeling of being disturbed when we're impatient. So also in connection with that, there was an interview with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and it really struck me when he was asked if he had made any progress in the Dharma. And his answer was, in 1 year, no, I can't see any progress after a year. But after 5 years, little bit. Then he put his hand up like this. I happened to be there. And then he said, maybe 10 years, some I can see some progress. And 20 years, yes, I see some progress. And I realized, oh, how patient he must be. Probably, you know, that's my projection. He's very down to earth too. He probably has had many moments of impatience mindfully. Unlike my own unmindful impatience a lot of my life. Also, very inspiring is this from Rilke. Be patient toward all that is unresolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves. Do not seek the answers that cannot be given you, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. And it's true in terms of the Dharma. I don't have all the answers, but a lot of the questions I have been answered through my own practice and through connecting them with what I've learned from others. Impatience, too, has tremendous power. The habit pattern of impatience makes, you know, going to do our list for the day a lot more important than connecting with other human beings sometimes. Getting things done. Oh, I know this only too well. And just the other day, about a week ago, I was talking with a friend of mine, and we were talking about our mothers. And I knew I was going to give this talk on patience. And I remembered the time that I was in the store with my dear mother, little Filipino lady, not even 5 feet tall, 90 pounds, very small. And one of the most favorite things she used to do when she'd come to stay with us on Maui, she lived in San Jose, California, was to make the traditional foods for us. And I would take her to the store, and she just loved to push that cart around and get everything she needed to make this wonderful adobo, this Filipino dish for us. And so usually I would just drop her off and come back and get her. And she'd love to just be outside waiting for me. But this time I had some or all of the children with me, I can't remember. And it was they were in their kind of later teenage years, and they had to get places, and I had my long list, and I was hurrying my mom up, and she had this kind of look come across her face, and I didn't even think to take that in. And then I said, come on, we've got to go, and I hurried her up, and we checked out, and she got in the car. And she sat beside me, and she started to cry. And I thought, I wonder what happened. And then I thought, did she get hurt? I said, are you hurt, Mom? And she said, I said, did you hurt your finger or something? And she said, no. And she just was real quiet. I knew it hurt her heart that I was not nice to her. I remember that with a lot of regret. And she died and already, you know, 3 years ago. And I never said I was sorry or anything, you know. I felt that. But I was really just impatient. It's really important to stay open and connecting to people. I learned that more after thinking about it after she passed away than the time that she was alive. But I was really good to my mom and I was really connecting with her. But sometimes we don't give ourselves the time to pause and see that look that comes over somebody's face that they might be hurt about something. Or we might not really be paying attention to something more important than our list. So it's the power of patience that allows us to do that, the power of pausing. This is from Georgia O'Keeffe. Goes back to that. She says, still in a way, nobody sees a flower. Really, it is so small, we haven't time. And to see takes time. Like to have a friend takes time. If we didn't have patience, we wouldn't be able to do this practice to transform our hearts and our minds through the very thing of sitting quietly and seeing what's actually there instead of being on the surface a lot. We need to go deep in our lives. We need to be quiet and see what's there to stay with the maturing process of transformation and all the boring plateaus, too, of the time we spend in practice. The rough passages, the passages when we think that nothing's happening. Patience is that gentle, enduring strength that we'll fall back on over and over and over again in our lives. So why did the Buddha say that it's the highest virtue? Because if we look closely at patience and really at all the paramis, as you'll discover when you study them in your own practice and we hear about them more, we need all the paramis in order to strengthen all the other ones. Patience is needed to support, for example, equanimity, which I'll be talking about on the last day of the retreat on Sunday. In fact, in India, the colloquial way of translating equanimity, upekkha is the word for equanimity in Pali. I'm not sure what it is in the various Indian languages, Eastern Indian languages, but it means to see with patience. That's how it's translated. It's like just equanimity is like taking it in, stepping back a little bit, and just letting it be. It's more letting it be rather than letting it go. Just letting the moment be and seeing that moment with patience. It gives us that quiet strength to carry out our resolve, resolution, one of the other paramis. It's a major part of goodwill, of caring for others, of caring for ourselves. So it's really important in relationship to nourishing the other qualities. Resting the mind before it falls into extremes. This is one of the ways we talk about equanimity. So we're not holding on to something we want to happen, attachment to some result. Neither are we pushing away something because we don't like what's happening. But we're just sort of standing in the middle of it all. This is the patience of equanimity. Cultivating these paramis and patience is more serious dharma work than we might imagine. For example, in the country of Burma, where I often go back and do my intensive practice. People there, the ones who can afford to, because afford to take the time, because going to a retreat in Burma, it's totally free, the food, everything, accommodations. But some people can't find the time, or they can't get away from taking care of their loved ones. But for those who can, and there's quite a number of the Burmese people, they take the time to do 1 or 2 months or 3 months of practice. 2 is kind of like the norm. 2 months of intensive retreat every year. Imagine that. It probably is needed to offset what's going on militarily there. And then the other part of the year, they do serious parami work. They take that year to take one or more of the paramis and really seriously work on them. And oftentimes when I ask my friends and my Burmese acquaintances, what monastery do you go to? It's kind of an interesting common question. What monastery do you go to? And the wife usually goes to one, and a lot of times the husband likes another monastery, you know. So it's sort of like Steve and I go to one monastery and he goes to another one all the time, and we kind of end up in one monastery the other together at the end. And then I ask, what parami are you practicing this year or this life? And mostly it's patience. Mostly the answer I get is patience of all the paramis. It's interesting that we've heard a lot of stories, and I've seen in my own role as a teacher, as a Dharma teacher and guide, that when people come into the practice and they experience what we call experience the Dharma, or they understand deeply the Dharma or the Four Noble Truths completely, or they experience Nibbana, Nirvana, you can see that their paramis are well developed. They come in a way that you can see quite readily that there's a lot of patience, there's a lot of resolution, there's a lot of balanced effort, there's a lot of goodwill already. There are many qualities, letting go, being able to let go, many qualities already developed. And usually the comment is that their paramis were well developed. That's a huge cause and condition for a deep maturing of the Dharma in one's heart, that the qualities of virtuous qualities of paramis are well developed, they're very ripe. Patience is a strong quality. It's a powerful quality. And sometimes in the West, people equate it with a weakness. Like, if you're patient, then it's just like you're a doormat to life, or you're just kind of, you know, stepping back because you don't have the strength to step forward. But stepping back is a powerful step. Sometimes, that kind of being humble to step back and to be quiet and to just take a look at what's going on, that's when you gather more information. It's when you gather more strength in you to maybe take that next step forward. That's a really important step, and so it's pretty powerful. One time, an interviewer said to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, "There is an apparent lack of anger," the interviewer said, "and there is a lot of obvious patience with your motherland of Tibet. Your land has been taken, your resources and people have been gravely hurt. To what do you, why is this happening? You know, you have scenes that you've, in a way, you've let them take it." And His Holiness said back, "They've taken this all. Should I let them take my mind as well?" You know, he realized that we need the power of patience in order to keep doing the work of standing up for one's rights or one's country or one's people. He says, when it is said that one should be patient and withstand trouble, that doesn't mean that one should be defeated or overcome. The very purpose of engaging in the practice of patience is to become stronger in mind and in heart. And also you want to remain calm. In that atmosphere of calm, you develop wisdom. If you lose wisdom, if you lose patience, if your mind flounders by emotions, then you've lost the power to see clearly. But if you have wisdom and patience, you can even increase your strength. So patience, it can be this, like this gentle flowing river in your life that knows when to go around. It doesn't dam up and kind of stop, but it keeps flowing. We feel that. It doesn't resist, nor does it strike out at, nor does it retreat in such a way that we give up. But it flows with what's flowing in life. There's also a flexibility and resilience to patience. When I lived in this small community, different from where I live now on Maui, this very old and small community on the slopes of Haleakala, that dormant volcano on Maui, there was this little community where a lot of Japanese people lived, and some Filipinos too. Local community, some Hawaiians. And there was an earthquake once, and it was rather strong, and the Japanese neighbors were talking across the street, so I went across and joined them. And they said to me, in our culture, we believe that when there's an earthquake, that you should go into the bamboo grove. And we had one on our piece of land, our little piece of land. And he said, they said, when the earthquake comes, if it comes again, you should go into that grove because the bamboo is very strong. It has strong roots in the ground. And it's so, the roots are so strong in the ground that the earth won't come apart. Well, I don't know if that's really true, but it's a good story. And the other thing that seemed really true that I'd seen is that when there's a huge storm, that very tall bamboo that's 50, 40 feet tall, can bend, the top of it can bend all the way to the ground and touch the ground, and at the end of the storm it can come right up and be straight again. And so this patience is like the resilience of bamboo. And we feel that. We feel that kind of strength, the strength of resilience, the strength of a gently flowing river that can just flow with the experience and at the same time gather information and wisdom. So these are the qualities of a beautiful heart, inner beauty, beautiful mind, patience. The patience that brings about that resilience, that gentle flowing strength, that ability to have intelligent response to life, to be able to have the power to pause and to be sort of have the strength to be humble in order to do that. Not to always have to put something out or say something, but to step back and take stock of things. So all these qualities, ready to be examined within us, ready to be nourished, ready to be enjoyed. I'd like to end with this proverb. It's an old Chinese proverb. Patience is power. With time and patience, the mulberry leaf becomes silk. So may that be so for each one of us. So thank you for listening to the Dharma. And I've left some time now in case you have any questions about your practice or about this subject. Any comments about how it's working in your life? Conditions for the arising of patience and what we can do to cultivate those conditions. Well, one of the first conditions is intention. That's the proximate cause for any of these conditions is intention. It's one of the most powerful proximate causes. But before that intention, sometimes we need to reflect on our life, on situations in our family life, in our connections with friends, and really weigh out how we are with that. Give ourselves a pat on the back if we've been patient, to really nurture that and recognize that. But be honest with ourselves in those areas where we're not patient, with individuals or with groups, certain people that we feel closed down to and don't want to give them or even our own minds the time to reflect on it. To reflect on our life and see where we need to bring more patience. So this is the quality of discernment that we need. And then after we make the intention to follow up on it, to be persevering. So it's not just the intention and the resolution, but to be persevering, gently persevering in, like that after you blow your fuse, give yourself another chance. And one of our friends who's been in AA now for 30 years or 35 years, I can't remember, when she reached her 20-year mark of being sober, we remarked to her, "Wow, you must have had a very strong intention to reach this place." And she said, "Yes, that intention was strong, but I've had to remake that intention every single day and with every single possibility of not staying on track." So it's that gentle reminder. To know impatience also, not just to know patience. Yeah. Being patience meets the what? The contemplation of impermanence.
He's talked about the Dalai Lama's story about 1 year, 5 years, and your 20th.
We'll have, right.
There's that urgency maybe to.
Yeah.
Practice now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So how do we come to terms with connecting patience with that urgency that we have? We don't know how long we'll be here. Yeah. When you look at the paramis, you'll see that some of them have opposite tensions. For example, patience has a very different energy than resolution. Right? And so it's bringing those two into balance, really, is to bring gentle, persevering effort. So it's, you notice that in the persevering effort for with each resolution, it's gentle. But then with patience, it's also being clear with what our aspiration may be and how I might bring that into understanding whatever goal we might have with the aspiration. Is that it's really important to not have attachment to the result, because we don't know how long we have. We may not, in this life, we may not get to the goal, but we can keep going in that direction. If we don't have attachment to result, we'll see more clearly. will know what the next step needs to be, or the next few steps. So when we examine the paramis, that brings up a good point, because when we examine the paramis, we see that, for example, loving kindness or goodwill, sometimes when you combine that with wisdom, or sometimes I say discernment as wisdom, we can be kind, we can have goodwill, but that doesn't mean that we have to be coddling somebody or around somebody sometimes, or just taking on their whole, making sure they're surrounded by goodwill all the time, or making sure we have so much loving kindness that making sure they get what they want or they need, or they're protected or safe, you know. I was reminded of a story that when the monks would go out, I just heard again this story recently, when the monks would go into the forest, they would come across snakes and creepy crawlers and all of that. So when these monks came back, they told the Buddha, and the Buddha gave them the chant of blessings to all the no-footed ones, to the one-footed, to the two-footed ones, to the multi-footed ones, blessings to all. May you be safe in your abode. And at the end, the chant says something like, now may you go away. You know? So you give your loving kindness, but also, you know, you have wise discernment. You let them go away. It's okay. So they have different resonances, the paramis. You have to balance them. Yeah, all of patience in dealing with afflictive emotions, especially craving. You know, do you do mindfulness practice, vipassana? Okay, so how many of you do vipassana that's here? Most of you do, okay. So we need a lot of patience when we, just in terms of sitting, and this is where a lot of our strength of being patient with afflictive emotions comes into play. When we can sit with the craving that's going on in our minds, and just be really patient with the rising and the changing and the passing away of it. We learn this a lot when we're doing our vipassana practice. We learn to notice what arises without identification with it. We notice to see the impermanent nature of it, or to see the not-self characteristic of it. And as we are able to stay with it over and over and over again, this is the development of patience. And without patience, we would never be able to get through all those hindrances, all those defilements that arise and pass away. So we are developing huge amounts of patience just doing our vipassana practice. Because it's arising, our instruction is to notice it's arising or it's changing and or it's passing away without acting on it. So without acting on it, just noticing it with qualities of patience, more and more equanimity, more and more of that inner resolution to just let it be and let it go. So when you're practicing in your sitting practice, this is what's happening, mostly because you're not acting on it, you're developing the patience. But when you're in life, and all this comes up, craving for pleasure in whatever form it comes, bodily pleasure, tasting pleasure, hearing pleasure, seeing pleasure, all of the pleasant experiences that will come with every sense door, we can develop patience by pausing before we go for it. You know, something may come up with, let's see, what was my latest craving? Dare I tell you? So, something that comes up during the holiday season is I want to go to that coffee place and have that special coffee with the whipped cream and the peppermint things on top, you know? So, I mean, this is a real life example. And they put that brown sugar on top too that tastes so good. Do you know what I'm talking about? But it's decaf. And I make it the skim one, the skim milk, but I do put the other thing on top, you know, the whipped cream. I have them put that. But I think about that. Man, I'm thinking about it right now, actually. So, and it comes up, you know, first it's a memory. I pass by that store and it's like, oh, and then I had that yesterday. I can have it today. So craving comes up. It comes first contact with the experience, a previous experience or an experience that could come, comes. And then that contact brings a pleasant feeling, right? We already get the pleasant feeling, we don't, because we think we're going to have it pretty soon or because it was pleasant before. And after that pleasant feeling comes craving. The craving isn't going after that coffee, it's really going after that pleasant feeling. So my patience is just being patient to notice that contact has come up. Just noticing that, okay, noticing that. And then that craving, that pleasant feeling has come up. Oh, that would be so good. That was so good yesterday, you know. And then noticing when craving comes up. I want it. And then planning and, you know, finding a way, oh, I'll go there after this errand, and I see the mind already getting there. So all of that is playing out and just watching in daily life, just watching every moment of it. And it's interesting when you have the patience to watch every moment of that, there's a greater possibility that you won't need to satisfy that craving. I can't say that it happens all the time through experience, but there is a greater possibility that the craving does not need to be satisfied all the time. It's very freeing it's just as freeing and enjoyable to not have it as it is to have it. Yeah. The power of letting go, of not giving in to that kind of suffering. The suffering of craving. It's true, you know, I have those experiences. But I also have a lot of the letting go experiences. Lest you lose faith in your Dharma teachers. Okay. To patience. How do we relate that? When we're patient with someone or some experience, we're being generous. That is a giving. That's a gift to someone. It's, and to ourselves, when we actually feel it inside. Because when you think about it, it's like usually when we're patient, we're letting go of some wrong speech, you know, or we're letting go of some way that we might harm that person with our speech or behavior. And when we can let go of that notion to harm, it's usually because we're patient. And what we're giving to them is a feeling of safety and a feeling of reverence. That's what we're giving. We revere them. When we look inside, we see that we've given ourselves a gift too, because it does feel really good. Fight impatience. So, something happened like that's racist. Uh-huh. Well, sometimes you could say that saying something direct and being strong about keeping a boundary that we need to keep for our own safety or for the safety of another. I'm not sure I would call it justified impatience, but I would call it justified standing up for something. You know, that's wisdom. That would be discernment. There's a story in the Buddhist time when somebody's got something stuck in their throat, like a bone or something. You don't, you know, talk softly. Or you might even hurt them in taking it out. And so we have to do that sometimes. We have to act quickly. We have to act strongly sometimes in order for protection, in order for safety of ourselves and for others. And then, of course, you know, we have to think about the right timing of it. Sometimes we can't be loving and sweet. We have to be direct and strong. But if we know the timing is right, then we do it, you know. Or sometimes we have to kind of eat the karma that'll come from that. Yeah, because the one time Manindra said to me, I had a similar question. It wasn't exactly like that, but this was probably 30 years ago. I can't remember exactly. But he said, you've done a lot of good in your life, and you will do a lot more good if you keep doing your practice. And he said, the good in your life can be like a huge ocean of goodness. And he says, in that ocean of goodness, if you just take a little bit of salt and pour that, you know, that salty salt in, you won't even taste it in that ocean of goodness. So sometimes you have to kind of remember that. And you have to say, I mean, I have 5 grandchildren, and many of you have children and have been with children, and sometimes you have to be very strong and say, don't do that, you know. Or I remember Steve, my husband, he was in an airport one time, and he tells his story, so I think I could tell it on him. And he had to get a ticket, and something was gone wrong, and Steve can be very direct, and he's very sharp-minded. And so the lady at the counter said, be nice. You're not being nice. And Steve said, oh, okay. You know, just like that. I'm not sure that would happen if I said that, though. To him. Anyway. Oh, dear, maybe. But I remember saying a lot of harsh things to my kids because I knew it would be harmful if they continued in that way. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, a false patience could be like fake patience. Maybe somebody else has a better word, but like when you're faking it, but you're really impatient inside. Yeah. Huh? Condescending? Uh-huh. Have you ever experience somebody say to you, or you say to them, I'm being very patient with you. I'm trying to be very patient. But they're really not, or you're really not, you know. You might as well say, I'm really impatient, but I'm not going to do anything right now. Yeah. Uh-huh. Or the similarities between. They're very similar, actually, patience and equanimity. I'll talk about equanimity on the last day, but equanimity is a spacious, calm balance, and where it's more specific with equanimity, where it's really clear in the mind that it's not going towards attachment, nor is it going towards aversion. It's just the ability to be, the mind is so big that it can hold everything, that it knows it's not going into any extreme. That spacious, calm balance. That's why they say it's very, in the colloquial Indian language, it's very seeing with patience is the description of that equanimity. Yeah. Did you? What's a good way to know when you should have patience? Well, if you look inside and you know that this is the right time to take action because you've got enough information now about what to do, how to respond, if you're confident in yourself, or you're fairly confident, then taking action is good. I'm going to repeat some of the ways that the Buddha talked about with regards to right speech that could also be interesting to connect with this, that we have to look at the right timing when we speak or we act. We have to look at when it's when we're in the best frame of mind to be able to do that. And to be able to discern with that frame of mind, is what I'm going to take action with in my speech or my behavior, is it skillful? Is it useful right now? So it's not like you have to go through those things one by one or get your list out or anything. You kind of know, kind of intuitively know if it's right to do. And sometimes we think it's right and we take action, we realize later, oh, I could have waited or I could have said it differently. And then we learn from that. So it's really important to just take our lumps sometimes, you know, and say, okay, I didn't do it exactly right, but I'm learning from this experience. And maybe next time I'll be able to intuitively know how to do it better